Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Gargoyle Protector, an Immortal Warrior's Romance by Rebecca F. Kenny. Narrated by Danny California. Chapter 1. Noemi. The bomb trotted into my lecture room on pointed metal legs and began unfolding itself in layers of ticking clockwork, sinking sharp claws into the planks of the floor. My students screamed and fled their seats while I stared, mesmerized by the core of whirling orange light at the bomb's center. Its magic slithered into my pupils, locking me in place, and though I knew what was happening, I couldn't run. In mere seconds, the orb would expand and annihilate me. I could picture the wreckage of the lecture room afterward. Splatters of scarlet across the desks, splinters of bone and wood driven deep into the plaster. If I'd been the average teacher at the Sorbonne, I would have died within a minute. But being Third Princess of Normandy had its advantages. My bodyguard, Jacqueline, leaped from her spot halfway up the slanted bank of seats and charged down the central aisle, bellowing at me to run. She hurled something over the bomb, a net of fizzing green light. The incendiary orb within the bomb strained at the net, bulging through it in places, swelling larger. Suddenly, I could move again. I snatched my bag and ran, while Jacqueline barreled after me. She knocked me to the floor and covered my body with her own as the bomb overcame her spell, as it split the air with its concussive force. Paneling burst into shrapnel around us, and chunks of plaster rained down on my head. Jacqueline's weight pinned me in place. The loose, inanimate heaviness of her body terrified me more than the aftershocks of the bomb, more than the creaking posts of the building and the sobbing of frightened students. I screamed her name, choking on plaster dust, writhing in an agony of fear for the woman who had been my constant companion for 6 years. My bodyguard, yes, but also my best friend. Something warm and wet trickled across my cheek. "Jacqueline," I whispered through a sob. "Jacqueline." Shadows approached through the sifting dust and the smoke.
"Princess!"
"Here." My voice shrilled and caught in a cough. "Help Jacqueline!" But they were already pulling me from beneath her, hustling me away. "Help her, damn you, or I'll see you all beheaded!" An empty threat, and the half-dozen security guards around me knew it. I had no such power, nor would I use it if I did. I was not the Crown Princess, or the Warrior Princess, or the Blood Prince. No, I was the fourth child, the easily forgotten one, the studious princess, the historian and teacher, useless in a time like ours, a time of war. Useful only as a target, a convenient bounty, a hostage, perhaps. Useful for getting other people killed. "At least tell me if she's alive!" I wrenched against the arms of the guards who held me, towing me along the hallways of the Sorbonne.
"Our duty is to see you to safety,"
a terse answer from a bearded mouth on my right. The man wore the embellished pauldron of a high-level security officer. "I think Jacqueline was only knocked out," added the female guard on my left, but she would not meet my eyes.
"Hold!" The captain held up a gloved palm. "You two check the hall, and the street outside. We need a clear path to the ship." Two guards forged ahead, while the others formed a protective knot around me. Pain in my knuckles drew my attention. I still held my leather satchel of books and supplies. My fingers had begun to ache with the force of my grip. Blood was spattered across my knuckles. Mine or Jacqueline's? A twist of nausea tightened my stomach.
"I'm not getting on that ship without Jacqueline," I said.
"She is Your Highness's personal bodyguard,"
one of the guards reassured me.
"She will be given excellent medical care."
The two scouts returned, and all six of the guards hustled me along another hall, past fearful eyes peering through the cracked doors of offices and classrooms. We broke out through a side entrance into the courtyard where students liked to gather in warm weather. Cold air slashed across my face and chest, a harsh reminder that the sun had long since been shrouded with lead-gray winter clouds. A step above the paving stones of the courtyard hovered one of the smallest royal airships, a skimmer, designed for short jaunts within the city. The long, narrow balloon floating above its passenger cabin could fit through all but the narrowest streets of Paris. Gilded embellishments glinted on its glossy wooden body. The most complex mechanisms lay at the tapered rear of the ship, where a pair of blank-faced clockwork mannequins poised, ready to resume their pedaling when given the word. I hate traveling by airship. I side-eyed the mannequins as the guards urged me aboard.
"We know, Your Highness. Climb in, please."
Complaining about the airship and the mannequins seemed petty when my bodyguard might have died for me a few minutes ago. I shut my mouth and ducked through the narrow opening into the cabin of the airship, a stuffy, padded space just large enough for two or three to sit. The captain and a guard joined me, closing the door. The gears spun, humming into action as the mannequins started to pedal. My stomach lurched as the ship ascended, its buoyancy fueled by hot air and mechanical propulsion. The mannequins had been brought to pseudo-life by an animancer, given vitality and limited cognizance, just enough to be useful. The northern half of France, under my parents' joint governance, teemed with such beings. Animanced teapots and steam carts and water wheels, animanced printing presses and lifts and ovens. Few people knew how animancy was accomplished. I myself did not know, and though I had asked about it countless times, my questions were always ignored or redirected. But ignorance of the method did not restrain our citizens from wanting animanced objects of all kinds, anything and everything that could be automated to make their lives easier. The measure of a household's income was the number of objects they could afford to have vitalized by the kingdom's registered animancers. The lower half of France, the kingdom laboring under the dominion of the Roi du Sacré-Cœur and the Verdier royal line, despised animancy. They used other forms of magic, elemental and natural sorcery, but they refused to permit the unholy art, as they called it, of bringing inanimate objects to life. A very religious people, our enemies, with church spires rising from every block of their cities, or so I had heard. Of course, we had churches, too. I could see the Cathedrale de Notre Dame from the oblong window of the ship as I pressed my face to the leaden glass, craving the tiniest wisp of fresh air. The spires of the cathedral loomed over the city, studded with hideous stone faces. why the architects carved such foul faces onto our places of worship, I would never understand. The guard pulled me back.
Not so close to the window, Your Highness.
I'm going to suffocate in here. I feel as if I'm inside a... I sucked in a breath, horrified that I was about to say the word coffin, when Jacqueline might be...
We're flying the river route through the city and then heading directly to Versailles, the guard reassured me. You'll be safe soon.
Safe? Imprisoned? I could not see much difference. They're not going to let me teach at the Sorbonne anymore, are they? The guards did not answer. They did not need to. My work was my true love, my outlet, my freedom. I enjoyed delving into the history of our people, crafting lessons to inspire my students and to keep them awake in class. I loved reading their essays. Well, most of them. I especially craved their questions and welcomed their curiosity because it mirrored my own. If I did not know an answer, the whole class would attempt to find it together. I firmly believed in the power of mental enhancement to create a better society. Until now, any risk to me had occurred outside the walls of the Sorbonne. They'd been minor incidents, hecklings by disgruntled citizens, nothing too dangerous or difficult to quell. The clockwork bomb that had walked so casually into my classroom had changed all of that. How it had avoided detection by the school's animanced security systems was a mystery others would solve, but I was beginning to wish my life had ended. Because without Jacqueline, and without my work, the yawning hollow in my soul would only expand until it encompassed me whole, and I winked out like a candle into nothing. Something clinked against the front window of the airship cabin, and the guard swept the curtain aside to check. It was a royal messenger. An animanced clockwork hummingbird, its wings whirring desperately as it tried to stay by the window despite the air streaming past the ship.
Let it in,
nodded the captain. When the window opened, the hummingbird shot into the cabin. Its tiny gears spun as it jerked to the left, then to the right. At last, it settled into the captain's hand, and he was able to extract the minuscule roll of paper from the tube in the center of the hummingbird's body. While he read the missive, a guard released the hummingbird through the window.
"You may only be on a brief hiatus from your teaching, Your Highness," said the captain. "The war may soon be over."
My heart jolted. What? How?
You're aware of the Blood Prince's latest project, the creation of powerful animanced warriors from living stone.
Animancers and lithomancers working together to create statuesque warriors who were practically indestructible. The gargoyles. Yes, I'm aware of the project.
An elite contingent of gargoyles was sent to the front lines a few days ago to assist with the ongoing battle. Apparently. The gargoyles managed to kill the Crown Prince of Aquitaine.
Mon Dieu,
breathed the guard.
Are they sure it was him?
It has been confirmed. The Aquitaines have not yet announced his death, but they will have to soon. His body was returned to them, in pieces.
How very civilized of us, I murmured. I had never met the Crown Prince of Aquitaine. In fact, I knew nothing of him at all. But I could not rejoice, even if his death might bring a quicker end to the war. Captain, you say that the war might end sooner because of this, but isn't it just as likely that the Crown Prince's death will galvanize the Aquitaines to even greater violence? The captain's beard sagged.
I suppose so.
I felt briefly guilty for stealing away his hope, but years of studying history, including past wars and their root causes, helped me perceive this conflict with a keener eye than some. I liked to think I had an objective view of the issues at stake, an understanding of both sides. History could be told different ways, and a historian's job was to take in information from all parties and distill it down to facts, to synthesize the truth.
We're here, Your Highness.
Desperate for air, I scrambled out of the airship's cabin the second they opened the door. Let's hope my father is in a good mood, I muttered.
The king left for Germany today, and as you know, the queen is in Rome, strengthening our alliance with Italy, said one of the guards. You'll be meeting with the Blood Prince.
Oh, my heart dropped. Well, let's not keep my brother waiting. Chapter 2 Gideon.
Something was wrong. I couldn't see, couldn't move, could barely think beyond the pervasive sense of wrongness. I scraped my mind for memories and came up with a swirl of murky images. Nothing clear, nothing I could latch onto. Voices echoed somewhere beyond the dark space that was my conscious mind. But do you think it wise, given the circumstances? The male voice belonged to an older man, and its timbre was harsh with worry. We've been using gargoyles for years now. We know the process and its results. The second male voice was younger, smooth as the word clicked into place. Honey. Smooth as honey. Honey. A gooey amber liquid, sticky and sweet. The same smooth voice continued. The risk is minimal, less than the princess is facing now. You know our mandate. How else do you suggest we fulfill it? With literally any other subject, begged the first voice, the older male. His words shook with intensity. You have others who would work just as well. If you use this one, it changes everything. The Blood Prince would not want. Do not presume to tell me what the Blood Prince would want, snapped the younger man. Do you share his bed as I do? No? Then be silent on the matter. You will tell him nothing. I cannot promise to keep this secret, replied the older man. It reeks of foolish hubris at best, and disloyalty at worst. I must tell him what you... A splatter and a gurgle, followed by a solid thump. My brain raced to identify the sounds. Familiar, they seemed. All too familiar, and they triggered a roaring fire within me, the urge to do battle. My willpower surged and condensed, and I drew on its force for one mighty effort. I opened my eyes.
Chapter 3 Noemi. My brother, the Blood Prince. A profoundly dramatic name for a profoundly dramatic man of 27, only 3 years older than me. My brother had managed to slither to the very top of the court circles, wielding nearly as much influence as our oldest sister, Elise, the crown princess of Normandy. He had shed less blood on the battlefield than the second oldest in our family, Dominique, the warrior princess, yet he bore the moniker of Blood Prince as he wore his customary cape of dark red silk, with consummate flair and inviolable ownership. After all, why wreak death with his own hand when he could move the hands of others? He even had his own throne room of a sort, a decadent parlor where he sat in state, receiving messages, granting favors, and enjoying all the little luxuries afforded to one in such a privileged position. I stood at the entrance to the parlor, invisible for the moment. Women in bird masks twirled past me, their arms draped with beads, clusters of mauve tulle and cornflower silk bunched at their shoulders and throats. One woman's backless gown revealed a golden serpent slithering up her spine, pinned in place by hoops woven through her very flesh. A slim man, probably no older than 18, wore only loose white pants, his torso encased in a golden ribcage instead of a shirt. A woman in an animanced corset stalked by, with a clockwork eye churning over each breast, exactly where her nipples should be. Golden glitter sifted from wigs, chains draped across naked collarbones or brocade doublets, and the tiles rang with the clip of high-heeled shoes and shining boots. As usual, I felt very plain in the presence of my brother's courtiers. I wore a black ruffled skirt, an off-the-shoulder blouse, and a brown leather corset, practical fare suitable for a professor. I'd made one concession to fashion. My skirt split high in the front, showing off most of my right leg, including a silver garter. But my serviceable clothes were now tattered, smoke-stained, and sprinkled with blood. My heart pinched horribly at the thought of the blood, and of Jacqueline. No, I could not think of her. My grief must be crushed, tamped down until I could be alone, until I could force someone to tell me exactly what had happened to her, whether she had survived or whether she had died, saving my life. Illogically, I would have felt stronger, more prepared to face my brother, if I had not been clad like a common working woman. "You should have let me change first," I hissed to the captain at my side.
"The Blood Prince ordered that you be brought to him at once," he responded without looking at me.
"And you do everything he says?"
"He is the Blood Prince."
"And if he and the Crown Princess Elise gave you contradicting orders, to whom would you listen?" The captain faced stolidly forward, but his throat bobbed under the scattering of beard hair along his neck. He did not reply, but signaled to my brother's herald, who lifted both hands and cried,
"Her Royal Highness, Noemi Marceline de Balfort, Third Princess of Normandy."
The milling crowd quieted, and bodies shifted aside, opening a path between me and Blood Prince Arnaud René de Belfort. An animanced drink cart on jointed metal legs skittered out of the way as well. The sight of it brought back a flash of the clockwork bomb in my lecture room, and I gasped, gripping the captain's forearm.
"My lady,"
he said stiffly, and walked forward, drawing me with him. My brother lounged on a cushioned ebony throne, his scarlet cloak spilling down over half a dozen agate steps. The agate had been forged and polished by lithomancers to his exact specifications, and it shone with a mesmerizing swirl of dark red and blood orange and creamy ivory. The blood prince was skeletally thin, a framework of bones pinned together with ambition and ruthless desire. He had never been strong of body, but his will more than compensated for the lack of good health. He wore trousers of striped black and white that accentuated his long legs. A padded waistcoat enhanced his ascetic torso, and its pointed shoulder pads gave the illusion of breadth and bulk. He did not rise at first, but leaned forward with elbows on his knees to watch me walk toward him. Arnaud excelled at exerting power in subtle ways. Hate spurted in my heart because he chose to flaunt his superiority over me today of all days. When I reached the foot of the steps, he deigned to rise and descend to me.
"Dear sister, such a dreadful morning for your little school. Was anyone killed?"
"I don't know," I replied. "No one will tell me. I don't even know if... Jacqueline..."
"I'm told she is with doctors, receiving the very best of care."
"Then she is not dead?" Hope, a fragile moth, shook its dust over my heart. The blood prince smiled, his teeth narrow and stained from 1,000 tonics, medicinal and otherwise.
"Not yet."
My breath caught painfully in my chest. "I must see her."
"Oh, no, little sister. You are not going anywhere, not after you were so nearly slaughtered. I suppose it must have been a response to our assassination of the Aquitaine's crown prince. A swift retaliation, but ultimately unsuccessful."
"Thanks to Jacqueline."
"Of course. If she survives, she will be given a medal of some sort. Until then, you must remain here in the palace at all times. You are the most vulnerable royal, and most likely to be targeted."
My mind flashed back to dark years in my childhood, when a number of bombings and gas attacks forced all the royal children to remain in secure, windowless rooms for months on end, without any visitors except for our tutors and a couple of trusted servants. I'd not even been allowed outdoors for an entire year. My parents had been traveling as usual, cementing alliances, they said, but I suspected they preferred the beaches of Italy to the smoke of bombs and the whisper of poison gas. They left us in the care of Madame Gagnon, a stalwart woman whose solution to our safety was complete isolation. I couldn't go back to that. Couldn't be shut away from the life and activity of the city. "I won't be imprisoned!" My voice shrilled, louder than I intended. I could feel every eye in the room focused on my back.
"Should we discuss this elsewhere, or can you maintain your composure?"
Arnaud hissed the words through a gritted smile. "Elsewhere, if you can manage to leave your precious worshippers for a few minutes."
"For you, dear sister, anything."
I knew he did not mean it, but I accepted the proffered gift of semi-privacy and followed him and his troop of bodyguards and aides. We exited the audience chamber by a side door and moved into a cozier parlor draped with lush tapestries, bedecked with plants and gaudy pieces of art. Every painting depicted some lush and lecherous scene, but with a horrific twist. Two men pleasuring each other, while a woman hung by the neck from a tree in the background. Several bodies twined together in passionate consummation, but when I looked closer, Each one was missing a limb or a head and sported a bleeding stump in its place. The Blood Prince's own brand of dark humor. Feeling more nauseated than ever, I sank onto one of the crimson couches while my brother sat opposite me.
"Something to drink?" he asked.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?